Hey my friend, welcome to the Tradie Success Podcast. I'm your host, Greg Allen, and I'm so excited that you're here. If you're new to the podcast, at the Tradie Success Academy, we help trade business owners create freedom from their businesses to live their best life. So I'm really excited to be sharing some of those lessons from members, other coaches in the academy, and my own experience growing my trade business. So make sure you hit subscribe and follow us on your current player, and you can head over to Spotify and ask a question where we get to understand what you want to hear more of. So make sure you do that, and until then, enjoy the show. Hey everyone, welcome to the Tradies Success Podcast. We're here today with James Stanistreet from Australian Agroforestry Solutions. Cannot wait to jump into our conversation today. We've got a lot we're going to cover in this one. We're going to talk about the industry. We're going to talk about how this project that James does is really impactful for his clients. We're going to share ways that people can get into the industry. We're going to talk about his business lessons, the challenges, and then stuff that he does outside of work to live a holistic life. So thanks so much for joining us, James.
Yeah, super excited to be here.
Awesome, man. So love to hear about agroforestry. So I asked before the session, what is agro? What does that stand for?
Yeah, agro, it's a good question. You know, because a lot of people know what forestry is, but agroforestry is kind of a new term for a lot of people. But if you think of the word agronomy, you know, so it's producing some sort of product that's valuable.
Yeah.
So whether it be food, whether it be fuel, whether it be fiber, whether it be medicinal, it's really forestry with one of those elements that's obviously bleeding into it. So yeah, that's what agroforestry is.
Amazing. So yeah. What got you into the industry? Like how did you get started?
Yeah. Look, one of those questions that obviously you go back a fair way in my sort of history, and I was a financial advisor a long time ago in a galaxy far away.
Yeah.
And, it was one of those things that I was at a wedding and I realized I didn't love what I did. I was happy to do it. I reached a point where I said to myself, well, what am I doing with my time? What am I doing? Because I was at this wedding. My sister's a winemaker. All the people around her loved what they did. They wanted to talk about the grapes on their time off. And I said to myself, like, is that how happy I am in my industry? Mm. And I realized I wasn't. I applied to do a Bachelor of Science, fascinated by sciences. And slowly but surely, it seemed to answer a lot of the problems that were incorporated in the world's issues, were sort of looking at sustainability and feeding yourself. And how do we, you know, have local small scale systems that, like you're saying before, lead to that holistic lifestyle that most people, you know feels quite good when you start to live them. So it was a natural progression through the sciences and then doing those courses outside of obviously the education. Mm-hmm. It sort of naturally just led me to this path to find other people that were doing what I was doing or similar things. And yeah, started a 3-year apprenticeship with Dr. Glenn Cross and fell in love with building and maintaining forests.
Amazing.
Yeah.
So Bachelor of Science, was that biology or what was?
Yeah, as a biologist.
Yeah, right. Yeah. And so you finished that and then you did an apprenticeship.
Correct.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Awesome.
He was one of the doctors at the university who was building forests at the time.
Yeah.
And yeah, just was curious to know what he was doing. And yeah, that's how I got into it.
Amazing. Cool. Yeah. Could you walk us through what you do from the moment a client reaches out to you all the way through to delivery and final, maybe maintenance as well?
Yeah. Awesome. Because it is all a part of it, right?
Yeah.
There's that first step, which is obviously meeting with the client, which is very critical. There's obviously the design phase, and then it goes into the installation and management phase. So the first step when we're really looking at it is meeting that client for the first time. So looking at sort of sitting down with them and saying, like, maybe they've come across and they've bought a recent property, or they've had the property for a while, but they don't know what to do with it. A lot of the time it comes down to them realizing they have land, they like the space, but they're not sure whether they should keep mowing it or growing trees or... Mm. And that's when we sit down with them and say, okay, well, what do you want? You know, is it koala habitat that you're after? You know, is it food systems? Is it vegetable gardens? Is it fruit trees? Is it regenerating the native rainforest? So in our area here in the Northern Rivers, we have a lot of native rainforest that was been here since Gondwanan times. Is that something you want to restore? We'll then go ahead with that client, sort of understand what they want. And then we're going to go ahead and use Google Earth or a drone, send it up, take a snapshot, and we're going to use the design software to then break that property up into segments And then when we put together a Gantt chart that sort of looks at how long it's going to take to implement that sort of those sections, what it's going to take, and give them some sort of idea of costings as well. Mm. And then obviously the management. So what's the follow-up of that? So they are quite long-term clients. You know, we're not going to be in and be out. Often it could be as long as, you know, 3 to 5 years for a lot of those sorts of plans. So yeah, obviously each client's different. You know, some of the properties are going to be smaller, just a couple of acres, and other ones maybe a few hundred acres. So yeah, it does vary a fair bit. But yeah, that's what we do.
Amazing. So with the design phase, so you obviously sit down with the client and you map it out and you say, well, this is what we can do. Do you give options of like saplings, but or like more mature trees to speed up the process, but obviously it costs more? Is that sort of the different options you provide to the clients as well?
Yeah, well, it's changing a bit as I go through the academy as well. You know, it's like good, better, best.
You know?
And a lot of the time I'll sort of get the client to understand that good is good, you know, but better is even better. And sometimes best is a little too much. And it does depend on my opinion and the property. And obviously with my industry, there's no two properties that are the same.
Yeah.
And it is going to be about sort of recommending, you know, using that specialty that I have, using that set of skills and sort of going ahead and recommending. And in a lot of cases, I might say, yeah, sure, like these options are probably a little over for what you need. Mm-hmm. But if they still want to go and get, you know, the best quality irrigation systems that they can,
yeah,
well, you know, by all means.
Some people do, eh? They want the best of the best. So.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
If you're the kind of individual that's got a couple of hundred acres, you're probably quite good at what you do, and
you
probably want the best in a lot of cases. And sometimes better is enough as well.
Really important thing that I think you just spoke about is you being professional and the expert in what you do.
Yeah.
I think a lot of tradespeople forget that. You know, electricians, plumbers, you know, anyone, they're the expert. The client doesn't really know how their job works. And so I think a lot of my personal experience with trying to train my team was trying to get them to understand that you're the expert.
Yeah.
You know a lot more than the client. Mm. And so by going in and just doing what they say isn't, you know, providing the best solution for them.
Yeah.
And so for you to come in, it doesn't matter if it's the size you do, which is like recreating the whole property, or it's just providing some solutions in a house, it's all the same. But we need tradies to understand that you're the expert.
Yeah, and sometimes you forget how much you know.
Yeah.
And sometimes you think like, oh, everyone sort of knows that, but a lot of people don't. So when you do come in, yeah, you are the expert. You do know what you're doing. And that's a lot of the time why they're running you in the first place anyway.
Yep, 100%.
Yeah.
So once you've got the design phase underway and they say, yep, great, we want to go with the better option, how do you go about project managing from start to finish?
Yeah, well, that's where the team sort of comes in and having a look at sort of knowing what's their first priority. So a lot of the time, looking at the backbone of sort of our industry and looking at sort of what I do, we do take a lot of nuance from sort of permaculture and looking at what we call zones. So there's zone zero to zone one and sort of moving from the homestead, the house, wherever the residence is, and progressing outside. You're looking
further away. Saying,
okay, well, what's this person going to see the most, first of all?
Yeah.
It's not going to be the back corner of the property, you know, 50 acres that way. It's going to be next to the house.
Oh, so, that's smart, yeah.
Yeah, you sort of want to go ahead and have that sort of connection and that instant, oh, that's right, we've got those guys and things are looking great.
Mm.
Instead of, you know, them spending all this money and then saying, well, I haven't seen anything because we've been down the back corner of the property.
So, yeah.
Yeah, start with the area where the people are living and sort of work your way out.
Yeah.
And then look at it as individual parts. So whether it be regenerating or whether it be bioengineering, you can then go ahead and sort of assess the level of severity. Obviously, if there's a heavy wall that's starting to fail, you may need to bioengineer it. That's obviously going to be pretty critical. So a lot of the time it's just about, knowing where the critical phases are that are particularly important and urgent and knowing what's not so urgent and not so important and sort of, carefully. And that's where the speciality, like being a specialist in the area, comes back in and sort of knowing what needs to be done when and having that trust with your client.
Yeah.
A lot of the time it's really important to have that client have trust in you by showing that you're skilled and competent, so they know that when you go ahead and you need to look after this area, that they can trust that you're doing the work for the right reason.
Yeah, it's about educating them as well and helping them feel confident in your ability to get it done the right way.
Yeah, absolutely.
Cool. So I'm interested in understanding more about regenerating rainforest or regenerating whatever the natural vegetation is of the area.
Yep.
So would that mean like camphor laurels or whatever have taken over and you've got to chop them down, pull them out, and then allow for rainforests to regrow? Or is about planting rainforest again? How do you go about doing that?
Yeah, this is one of like hot contention in the area.
Yeah, right.
You know, because there is a method where, you know, well, let's remove the trees that shouldn't be here and let all the stuff grow through.
Yeah.
But if you've had a cow pasture sit there for 50 years that's grown nothing but grass, there's no seeds coming through.
Yeah.
So if you're in an area that's next to another bit of bushland that's going to have all that seed in it, absolutely. Yeah, it's going to be able to push through. But you know, in an area where that seed isn't there, you may be looking at starting again. In that case, we put lines in, we put all those trees in, and we're going to go ahead and manage that with like brush cutters and clearing saws and sort of keep that area. In areas, what we call in-between areas, we're about 2 years old. It's really about going ahead, removing the smaller trees, leaving the valuable bigger trees, and then planting through. Or in some cases, it may be the case that there may just be patches that aren't rainforest trees and we might just fill in those patches as well. So each site's so different. And that's obviously one of those things that's why you have to come out and see the sites, is because you need to make those assessments on whether or not it's a clear and fill, or you're putting in those trees on, say, a cow pasture, or whether or not you're filling in those small spots. So yeah, it is very, you know, site dependent.
Yeah, right. I imagine this as like we're playing Sim City and we're like clearing the land and then we're planting the trees in the areas we want it to grow.
Yep.
Would you have like a property where it's all fully grassland and then you've got to build a forest on it? Does that happen? Or is it already?
Absolutely. We've got some properties. There's one we worked on, I think it was 300 acres, that they wanted every corner that wasn't a roadway to be forests.
Wow.
And, you know, they've been purchasing neighbours' properties to do the same thing. So, yeah, there's a huge resurgence at the moment of people wanting just forests.
Whether
that be agroforests or regenerative forests or food forests, but particularly in the regenerative forest, it's a huge industry at the moment with people wanting to give back. You know, they've done this time in Sydney, they've done the time in Melbourne, they want to give back to the trees that have given so much to the earth.
Yeah, right. And so would you plant small trees like saplings or would you plant bigger trees?
Yeah, so small saplings.
Yeah.
Yeah, so generally they're in these tubes. We get them in tubes in 50 packs, and then we're able to use augers and put them in the ground.
Yeah.
And we cover them as well so wallabies don't eat them.
Yeah.
And then they start their process.
That's awesome, man. So what about the trades that you're working with on the project? So what sort of trades are you working with on site?
Yeah, thanks, Greg. I think all of them, and especially depending on how we've come onto the site. But a lot of the time it will be, we've had someone new buy a property and there's not much there. And, you know, they've decided to purchase maybe 100 acres in the hills of, say, Byron or Lismore or wherever it may be.
Yeah.
And a lot of the time they're going to want, you know, a homestead, you know, a pool house, maybe a yoga studio, a pottery studio.
Yeah.
They often want, you know, infinity pools.
Yeah.
So landscapers as well. And a lot of time, like big work. So excavators are going to come in to help sort of clear out old vegetation in maybe creeks.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, looking at the roads that need to be built. So bulldozers, excavators, and then all the drains that go along with those.
Yeah.
As well as, you know, all your classic stuff like, you know, people that spray weeds on the side of the road as well. So
yeah,
it can be really diverse and depends on how much that client wants. But yeah, normally we'll see, builders, excavators, bulldozer people.
Yeah, cool.
At least, yeah.
Yeah. So one of the big things I'm trying to do with this podcast is help educate other trades around the other trades and the way that they work together. So create a culture of cohesion rather than, you know, complaining about each other when they do something wrong. So what are some of the things that you notice some of these trades do which impact your industry and your trade? Like you might have had a plan, but they've done it wrong. How can we educate those people so that moving forward, they're like, oh, that's interesting. I didn't realize that. I'll keep that in mind for next time I'm doing that sort of job, whether that's earthworks or any of the other trades that you see.
Yeah, I think being able to see how the whole thing is working as an ecosystem, like on our jobs in particular, when you look at the farm or the property as an ecosystem, all the people have their own different roles. And you need to understand that some people's specialties are not your specialties and your specialties aren't other people's specialties. You're not there to fight with each other in any kind of way. You're actually there to support and sort of make this whole ecosystem you know, work to the best of its ability.
Yeah.
I think that's going to be one of the tricks really to sort of get these guys sort of work together and understanding where the boundaries are for each of those industries. And if you think that the boundaries are going to overlap, you know, have a talk, discuss it.
Communicate.
And say, well, you know, what, where do we stand? So once you really define those boundaries, I think that'll help sort of determine, because one of the big issues, right, is people coming along and saying, oh yeah, you know, there's all this flake on the roof, and it's burned it in. Oh yeah, that was the scaffolders.
Yeah.
Oh, that was the other industry. That's not our fault. So once you're able to sort of take responsibility for an area, I think that's going to enable trades to own that area in particular, and really build that communication. So you're not fighting with each other. You're actually working together to sort of, you know, achieve that goal.
Yeah, that's a vision for the industry as a whole. I'd love to see everyone just really cohesively working for the client, you know, rather than fighting against each other and this shit talk culture. I think it's, you know, shit.
I did so too.
Yeah. Cool. Awesome. So someone looking to get into your industry, agroforestry, a young person, someone that might have been like you, is in an industry they're not fulfilled in and they're interested in testing out some other trades or maybe starting an apprenticeship, what would you say to them about your industry and what sort of person would really thrive in the industry you're doing?
Yeah, definitely. Well, I think the big thing as well, especially in an industry that is new, like a lot of people have no idea what an agroforester does, reach out. You know, you've got pathways that exist already, whether it be, you know, online, whether it be through YouTube or whether it be through any sort of avenues you can, and go and explore what's out there and what people are doing. You know, whether that be through, you know, I know in our local area, there's something called Green Drinks, where if you're interested in the green industry, you can go ahead and sort of look into working with landscapers or speaking to landscapers and sort of go along and say, hey, look, I haven't spent any time as a landscaper. I haven't done any agroforestry stuff, but I love being outdoors. I really want to do something with plants or retaining walls or whatever it is, and give it a go. You know, a lot of those people, a lot of our trade, we're always looking for people to sort of show that passion, because at the end of the day, we love what we do.
Mm.
You know, we want people to come and join us and, you know, revel in that sense of passion together. And if you're sort of out there sort of thinking, well, how do I get in? You know, oh, these people know so much, I'd feel weird. Don't, you know, just find those, whether it be even on Facebook groups or wherever it may be, you know, find the people that are doing stuff and just say, hey, look, is this something I could be a part of in any way? Can I do a day or whatever it may be?
Work experience or, you know, free, like just come and work for free. You know? Obviously the business owner needs to know they've got to have work cover for those free workers even. But apart from that, like I think that's something that a lot of people don't do. They sort of call it, hey, you've got an apprenticeship? Oh, okay, bye. It's like the amount of calls we get at Response, electricians asking for apprenticeships, or it's their mum calling up for an apprenticeship.
Yeah.
You know, you've actually got to get out there and you've got to, you know, show interest and be interested and actually read the website and know the company that you're calling.
Yeah.
If you're looking to get in and talk to them, show that you're interested in exactly what it is that they do.
Yeah. And I think also to just sort of like, you want to explain, like, why do you want to be part of this? Like, if you have a true passion for it, don't ring up and just sort of say like, oh yeah, I want to do this. Say, hey, look, I'm passionate about this. I want to know if this is something that could be good in the long term or not. And I think that's going to really go ahead and make people think, well, maybe this guy's really interested in, and if you give him a bit of a chance and he's got that sparkle in his eye, then, you know, maybe he'll be one of the greatest employees we've ever had and he'll be there for 20 years, you know?
Yeah, 100%. Great segue into business. So what got you starting your own business? Did you start straight out as soon as you finished your apprenticeship?
It was interesting. I had a bit of a changeover period during that time. We had a lot of water in Lismore at the time. It was naturally going through a stage where me and the person that gave me this chance and sort of taught me how to build forests, he was moving on.
Yeah.
You know, it is quite physical work. And he was saying, look, I'd rather do something else with my time.
Mm-hmm.
He's a professor. He's obviously got other things he can do with papers and so forth.
Yeah.
I'm gonna leave the industry generally. So that was my sort of time to go ahead and go, well, I've either got to move on in regards to set up my own business or find someone else's business that I want to be a part of. And no one was really doing what I was wanting to do on such a broad scale.
Yeah.
It's not just fencing. It's not just vegetable production. It's not just forests. It's not just food forests. So it was all of it. So
yeah.
I had a lot of the tools forming and then decided I'm going to stick this out. I'm going to go ahead and slowly, you know, buy all these tools and develop this company as I go. You know? So that was the sort of the kick along that I think I needed to move into the real operation.
Awesome.
Yeah.
So what was the realization? So you obviously started your business and then, like, let's just fast forward a year. Like, how is it different from the excitement of starting a business to, like, the reality of running a business?
Oh, yeah. Right. It's fascinating. It's because you think, right, when you're working for someone, you go, well, all they need to do is pay me and they just collect the profit.
Yeah.
You know? It's fascinating. And then obviously you realize, you know, you've got to pay work cover and, you know, there's all this, you know, GST and there's taxes and there's everything else that comes along with it. There's, you know, all the administrative costs and all the fees with all the programs. And that was one of the big things that sort of gives you a bit of a shock and you sort of wonder, oh, well, I wonder if I've made any profit, or you don't even know. So that was one of those fascinating moments that you go, oh, well, where should I go from here, you know?
So what were some of the biggest lessons you learnt over those first couple of years in business? Like what?
Don't overassume that people know more than they may know. You know, a lot of the time you've been doing something for a long time and you just assume everyone's going to think the way that you think about something. Make sure you show them first. Make sure you show them once, you then watch them, and then you stand back and you watch them from further away and make sure they understand before they go ahead and do it. You know, otherwise you may come back in 2 hours and have it completely.
Yeah, I love that. And do you know what? I think I made that personal mistake over and over again, and knowing the amount of businesses I've worked with, and they do the exact same thing. You assume, oh, you're qualified, therefore you should know.
Yeah.
And so here's a vehicle, go and do it. And then you find out really quickly when you're getting customers calling you, complaining, why are they still on site? This is only meant to take X amount of time.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's so important to onboard your team in a really effective way. And like you said, have supervision, even though they are qualified.
Yeah.
Understand, like really know that they know,
yeah,
you know, rather than just assume that they know. It's such a good point.
Especially if you want to be the top of your industry and they've come from somewhere, yeah, sure, they're qualified, but are they qualified to the standard that you need to present?
Yeah.
And a lot of the time they're going to say, oh yeah, I'm qualified, I've got a bit of paper.
Yeah.
But a lot of time they're just not going to be up to scratch. And I guess that's what drives a lot of that innovation, is sort of just finding off those edges by saying, okay, well, let's watch how you do it. And then we'll show you how to do it really well.
Yeah.
So I think that makes a big difference.
Love that. Cool. And so what was the point that you were like, I need some support, or, you know, I'm looking for some support, and you join the academy? Like, what was that? What was happening then?
Yeah, look, that's a really interesting question, because it got to a point where I had a whole lot of accounting software that was coming through, but I hadn't yet developed proper systems. I was using sort of a calendar system to sort of try and organize where should people should be and when.
Yeah.
And that was sort of starting to fail, and there were cracks appearing there.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know how much I had to be charging, so I was just kind of going off what the guy that gave me the apprenticeship was, and sort of just added a few dollars on there. And I realized I didn't know. I thought, like, surely there must be someone out there that knows how to work out some sort of real figure so I know where I stand.
Yeah.
And yes, I was able to sort of, I think I saw an advertisement somewhere and sort of reached out and had a bit of a chat, and instantly they were able to say, yeah, look, there are steps you can take and these are some of the options, and that's exactly what we do. And and that's what made me to jump on board, is just having that loss of sense of where I was and where I was going and if I'm doing the right thing.
Yeah.
You know, especially when it comes to those sorts of programs that you don't even know exist and take so long to find on your own. You think surely someone knows about this.
Yeah. I think that's what's so good about what we have at the academy, is the collective knowledge.
Yeah.
Like, even for me, I did the exact same as you, but I was years of like banging my head against the wall for every little thing. Yeah. You know, like, once a year there was a conference you could go to and someone would say a few tips and you're like, oh my God, I didn't even think about that.
Yeah.
But we've got that every day in our community. So, you know, and we're constantly working to help people understand in a more methodical and easier to consume way. So it's been awesome for you to have that, you know, realization experience now and see what you've got to do moving forward.
Yeah, it's one of those things as well that you also don't realize that you don't know what you don't know until you get told about it.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't realize how much my business could go further.
Mm.
I sort of just assumed that that was the sort of end of the line. It'd be, you know, wrapped up with a few different programs and that was it. And it's just fascinating to know how much more there is out there.
Yeah.
But you don't know until you know, right?
Yeah, that's right. Cool. And then also love to talk about some of the biggest mistakes you've made, because I think people make so many mistakes. I've made thousands of mistakes.
Yeah.
But I'd love to hear some of your main ones and the lessons you've learned off the back of those mistakes.
Yeah, wow. Look, I think the biggest mistake is I wish I'd reached out earlier and seeked advice around setting up the business with some sort of business coaching system off the bat. You know, even now there's things that take so much time to undo before you can do them the right way that you think, if I had just started it at the beginning with all the proper help, then I wouldn't have to go and pedal back all this way, you know?
And yeah.
It's one of those things that I thought I would have learned in finance, was that you get the advice from the people who know what they're doing and you won't have to get it twice.
Yeah.
You know, and I wish when I set it up originally, I got some people that knew what they were doing and professionals at it and just started it like that. I would have saved myself a lot of time. And
yeah. Money. Yeah, totally. I think that's the big one as well, is the lost opportunity cost.
Oh, yeah.
You know, all of the opportunities that you just can't get to because your systems are faulty or inefficient.
Right.
Yeah.
And all those leads you don't chase up because you were doing something silly that you shouldn't have been doing anyway, you know. And exactly. So
no awareness around it as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're not aware, so you don't think about it too much because you don't have time and it all snowballs down.
And I was just saying before the podcast as well, like even I now still, like with the team we've got, I have to reflect, I have to understand where my time is going, because if I don't, I get stuck in that trap. Like I get lost opportunities everywhere, just on a bigger scale. So it just happens faster. So it's about, you know, setting up the systems, making sure you got the team, train them like you said, make sure that everyone's there to support the system and the system runs well. So that's really cool. Hey, I'd love to dive in now just to outside of work. So obviously you're really passionate about your industry and your trade, but I'd love to talk about some things that you've learned around running a business with your family, and then some personal performance stuff that you've identified helps with you being a better business owner as well. So
yeah. Look, I think one of the things with family, right, is especially when you start out setting up the business, you try and cram everything into these hours during the day, and you don't think, oh, well, I'm off business now. You think, oh, well, all the things that I didn't get done in the day, it gives me an opportunity now. You know, and then sort of family time rolls away and, you know, the kids are home from school and you think, oh, I'm too busy. And the time, you know, marches on and you think, surely there's got to be a better way. Learning those strategies and using tools and learning how to switch off by, you know, unloading into programs or somehow getting it all out, and then making sure that time is there to sort of, you know, look after your kids and make sure, you know, you can go out and spend some time with your partner. It's so critical.
Yeah.
And a lot of that comes down to just understanding that process that's often sort of taught, is once that process is known and you have an idea and you are able to go ahead and say, well, this time is blocked out for this and I've got this, it leaves you at the sense of the end of the day with this sort of refreshing feeling of like, oh, it's so good that I've done what I need to do and now I have some proper time for the family.
Yeah.
You know, it's not just like, oh, you can have sort of 25% of me, but I'll be on my phone, tapping away and I've got to organize those plans to come in and because you're not really there anyway. You might as well
be in the office. Yeah.
Exactly. So
yeah.
And it is critical because also you're going to miss out on those other things. And I think especially for a lot of, I know for a lot of men, it's one of those things. I think people do need to have something that you're growing in, you know, whether that be like, you know, a Brazilian jiu-jitsu or for myself, karate, or, you know, even if it's chess, whatever it may be. I think having something outside of like the workplace and the home place and having that third place where you go to grow and develop is absolutely critical. And if you can go ahead and organize your time, not only is the wife and the kids going to be happy, but you're going to be happy.
Yeah.
You're developing and growing, even if work is going off its head, you know?
Yeah. That's the first thing that goes when you get busy on site, like the workload grows on the tools for any trade. The first thing that sacrifices is the personal things. So your own exercise, your own, you know, discipline, the karate stops. You stop eating properly because you're not exercising, and it doesn't even matter because I'm not exercising. You stop sleeping properly because you're not exercising, not eating well, and you've got way too much on your mind.
Yeah.
And then you stop talking to your partner because you're too busy, and your mindset starts to suffer and you feel really unconfident. And, you know, so it's just a snowball effect, and we have to protect that at all costs, because if you're not showing up as the best, your best self at work, your family suffers, your team suffers, your clients suffer.
Yeah, that's why one of my non-negotiables as well is the morning routine. So, I make sure I wake up. I know locally we have a great company that does like a mixture of different local mushrooms. So like cordyceps and lion's mane.
Yeah.
Wake up, have those with a coffee, ashwagandha, set my brain up, get the gym in, and then my body's ready for that.
Awesome.
Ready for that day, which means that then I'm able to get through the day, see the family, get to karate, and it all flows together because of those non-negotiables.
Yeah, you know? So good. Have you experienced that when you're way too busy on the tools that you stop doing the other things?
Yeah, you do the things that will help you. You stop doing the things that will help you actually get through the whole thing.
Yeah.
Which is the last thing you should do, right?
It's like
selling the car for petrol money. You
know? Yeah, that's such a good analogy.
Yeah.
Awesome, cool. Hey guys, just to wrap this up, thanks so much, James. James is going to teach me some karate outside. So you guys stick around. We're going to learn some karate moves, but it's been a pleasure having you on the show, and cannot wait for people to hear your story. And guys, if you're in the academy, reach out to James on the app, the new Tradies app. You can just find him on there and say thanks and let him know how this has helped you. Thanks, everyone. Thanks, James.
Thanks, Greg.
Have a good one.
You too.
All right, karate time. Let's go.
You.
Hey, I hope you enjoyed the episode. For me, it took me a long time to grow my trade business because I made so many mistakes. It was stressful, it was lonely, and I didn't know what I needed to do to grow the business. And now that I've got operational time freedom myself, you know, I've moved to Byron Bay, my company runs by itself in Perth, it gave me the inspiration to want to help people like you not go through the challenges that I face. And now we're helping people get there in just a matter of years from startup. So I'm so excited to introduce the Freedom Fighters program at the Tradie Success Academy, where you can get to operational time freedom and live your best life. Head to the show notes, click the link, and check out the Freedom Fighters program today.